Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me tell you congratulations on your long time in radio. You are your team and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it, but you already know, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, make that 37 years of uninterrupted Ring Talk Radio, of course, coming at you in a couple of weeks now. We celebrate anniversary number 37. I'm glad you're joining us for the ride. Of course, some people have been here since the beginning through the internet, of course, KEST, the Charles J Show, I go on and on. But the bottom line is, we're here live, rock and rolling, of course, on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, and have been here since, I think, 2005. Straight up, long time. But, you know, 36, 37 years of radio, I never anticipated it being that long. It was sort of a bit of a lark. Somebody said to me, you can't do radio. And then, of course, Charles J. started getting me on the radio and giving me a couple of bucks to talk boxing on the radio. And we called it Ring Talk. And before you knew it, I got my own little show, a 15-minute show on a station that had a Chinese show before me, a Filipino show before me, and an all-Christian show after me. So my boxing fans weren't too kind to the Christian show because, I mean, we're getting flooded with phone calls back then, right? Flooded with phone calls. And, of course, they would get phone calls, hey, where's the boxing show? And, of course, these guys are talking about God and things like that. Didn't work out all that well. Bottom line is, they changed us. We went syndicated, of course, Sports Byline. We ended up at Sports Byline after 35, 36-plus years now. Still knocking out all bums along the way. There were some good people, and some horrible people too as well. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We're talking boxing MMA for the next hour live on Sports Byline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Well, you have to talk to my lawyer on that one.
Guess what? It was Bill O'Neill's birthday yesterday. I want to mention Bill O'Neill. Of course, he's our little historian. When I say historian, I say his and then dash historian. He's our guy, no doubt about that. Happy birthday, Bill O. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into the world of boxing, the MMA. Sean Porter. WBC welterweight title holder, a fringe title, whatever you want to call it. Bottom line is, of course, he got beat by Errol Spence for the welterweight championship. He's now 31-3 with a draw and 17 KOs after going 12 rounds with a mark by the name of Sebastian Formella. The guy was from Germany. He was tough. He was 22-0 coming in. He's now 22-1. Couldn't punch much. He was just tough. And the bottom line is, you know, this wasn't a fight I think he needed to put on television. I mean, I guess we were trying to get Porter a safe fight, but having him go 12 pedestrian rounds the way he did, it didn't do anything but maybe enhance the stature of some of Sean Porter's intimate fans, like his family members. But outside of that, I couldn't see too many people getting up on that without some Viagra. I kid you not, it wasn't that good of a fight. I'm being honest with you. Of course, Dillian White, we talked about that in depth in hour number one. Of course, getting knocked out by one punch, man. Alexander Povetkin, 40 years old now, 36-2. A draw, I think, in 25 whacks. Of course, scores his fifth round knockout, this one-punch knockout. And what happens is he's getting lit up. He gets dropped twice in the fourth round, you know, and he's losing on the cars, no doubt about that. And then he sort of faints to his left, and he comes up with an uppercut, and the uppercut is shot between the gloves of White, and it hits him right on the chin from underneath. He doesn't see it coming, and he's snoring. He was snoring by the time he hit the ground. The ground might have woke him up, but he was out cold, no doubt about it. I mean, chilled, absolutely chilled. One punch. Listen, it made me feel good about being a boxing fan again because, like I tried to tell you before, if you watch an NBA season, it'll be 82 games, right? 82 games, something like that, if you're watching an actual NBA season. you're probably going to get a good percentage of entertainment out of those 82 games, a higher percentage per se per event than you would a boxing match. In other words, you watch 82 fights, you're not going to be all that pleased with as number wise as you would, I think, with an NBA score. So that's just the way boxing is. Good fights are few and far between. Significant endings, one punch endings. Of course, that's always the way boxing's supposed to be. I mean, it's just supposed to be that way. I never scored any one-punch knockouts coming from behind. I never did. I mean, that's all it was. Coming from behind. No, I was getting my ass whooped. There was no knocking nobody out, coming back and knocking somebody out with one punch. I never saw that. But some people can do it. And last night, or yesterday, Povetkin did it. And, of course, he upset the apple cart as far as the heavyweight division is concerned, because Dillian White, the guy that failed one, two, maybe three or four. How many Flintstone vitamin tests did he fail? I mean, he every time he was about to fight, he was steroids. Performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, at one point, I think they tested him one time, and they found two or three different drugs in him. He was like a pharmacy. I kid you not, like a smorgasbord of performance-enhancing drugs in his system. Anyway, Dillian White, now 27-2, 18 KOs. Listen, I don't chuckle too often, okay? But I'm chuckling at that knockout. I am chuckling. If you watch it on YouTube, go to YouTube and knock it. Watch it, of course. Dillian White, Alexander Povetkin. You can watch it time and time again. And you can realize what it's like to watch a guy that's basically tried to cheat his way to the top. He did. He conned a lot of people. He was able to get by with this medical exam and this medical exam and questioning this test and questioning that test. So we sort of all were left scratching our heads, even though people were suspending him and saying he couldn't fight here and he couldn't fight there. We were all left scratching our heads. It was sort of like, what's going on? Well, now we don't have to know what's going on because he got knocked the duck out. And, of course, he's demanding an immediate rematch. His promoter, Eddie Hearn, showing all the class of, like, Don King after Mike Tyson getting knocked out by Buster Douglas in Japan, you know, basically giving Povetkin no respect afterwards, even though he had both guys. This is what I don't get. He's got both guys. It wasn't like Don King ended up losing a portion of that, but Douglas. But he had both guys. I mean, as far as this fight was concerned, Eddie Hearn. And he's upset. He should have went in there a bit optimistic and, you know, and talked real well at the post-fight press conference about how good Povetkin did. Instead, he didn't. He kept saying, oh, it was an upset, it was a fluke, it was this, it was that, blah, blah, blah. And Dillian White will be back. He's going to invoke an immediate rematch. I don't know. I don't want to see an immediate rematch. Speaking of ordered fights, the WBO is going to order, of course, the King of Mexico. I'm talking about Emmanuel Navarrete Martinez. The once beaten, of course, WBO 122-pound champion who jumped weight classes is now going to fight at 126 pounds. He was originally supposed to take on Jesse Magdaleno. I think Magdaleno was a good fight. I mean, once beaten Magdaleno. Now he's going to take on a guy by the name of Villa. And that's going to Ruben Villa, who's 18-0 with 5 KOs, not much of a punch, ranked number 3 by the WBC. Anyway, they're going to do this for the vacant WBO 126-pound championship. Speaking of WBO, of course, the WBO light heavyweight championship, what can I say? It used to be Sergey Kovalev, but he used to be a really dominant fighter. I mean, Kovalev was like, I mean, he was him until Andre Ward came along. Andre Ward sort of cracked his shell, made, you know, sort of out-bullied the bully. Andre sort of, the first fight, it was a draw. Andre might have lost that fight in some people's mind. Might have lost that fight. Might have got a bit of a hometown decision there. But in that second fight, he took it to Kovalev, and he beat Kovalev up. I mean, he beat him up. I mean, it wasn't talking about outboxing him. He beat him up. A couple, you know, borderline low blows. In other words, I'm bringing it to you, baby. I'm bringing it to you. Andre Ward brought it to him and stopped him, okay? That was, I thought, the end of Kovalev. Kovalev's an old man. Anytime these guys say that they're, 29 years old and they're fighting out of the former Soviet Union, Kazakhstan, and places like that, I always question their age. I used to question the Cubans. I tell you about the Cubans. One time we had a Cuban fighter, Dio Belis Hurtado wasn't the guy, but he was part of that same crew, and the guy's name was Mario something. Anyway, he turned out to be 5 years older than he was, and I had a birth certificate that said he was 5 years younger than, I kid you not. So he had a phony birth certificate. These guys coming from Cuba, that's just the way it was done. That's how they ended up fighting a lot in the amateurs here in the country when they were really like professionals. The guys had like 90, 100, 300 fights, and they're fighting here in the novice golden gloves. And they need to shave at the age of 15, stuff like that. So we went up against those rough-ass Cubans, no doubt about that. And now, as far as the boxing games are concerned, The Cubans don't dominate anymore. What happened to that? The Russians dominate now for the most part. They do. As far as the amateur ranks are concerned, I think as far as MMA is concerned, I mean, look at the world of MMA. It's sort of like the Russian, the Iron Curtain type of fighters taking place. You know why? hunger. People are hungry. I'm serious. When you got to wipe your butt with a rock, and that's what some of these folks had to do, when you got to wipe your butt with a rock, guess what? You will do certain things. You will sacrifice certain things. And that's why those Russian fighters were so hungry a few years ago. I don't know if it's going to continue to be that way. I mean, you know, that's the way it is with Mexican fighters. Hunger. Hunger propels them. That's what motivates them, hunger. Because if they weren't hungry, they wouldn't be motivated. Look at Roberto Duran. Case in point, once he got the money with Sugar Ray Leonard, never the same. We all admit that. I mean, he beat Ray Leonard the first time, got $1.5 million, the most money he never made in his life, June 20th, 1980. Of course, comes back, gets offered $8.5 million if he can be ready in 8 weeks or less for Sugar Ray Leonard in the rematch, November 25th, 1980. Of course, he said he took the fight, knowing he was going to have some weight woes. He barely made the weight. He was weak, didn't perform well at all. And, of course, when Ray was about to knock him out, he said no moss and quit. And, of course, they would never fight again. But that was that ruined Duran. The money ruined Duran. Yeah, he got in shape and knocked out people like Davey Moore in a big upset, of course, in 1983. And then, of course, went 15 rounds with marvelous Marvin Hagler at a point in time when Marvin was considered pound for pound the greatest fighter in existence and, of course, the greatest middleweight of all time. And here's this little lightweight, a guy that's normally like 25 pounds lighter, kicking his ass over 12 rounds. If that had been a 12-round fight, Roberto Duran would have won. Nobody brings that up. They always talk about Hagler, the great middleweight. Hagler, the great middleweight. Well, who did he beat at middleweight that was really great? He didn't. He beat Sugar Ray Leonard. And he didn't lose. He lost to Sugar Ray Leonard. He beat Tommy Hearns. Tommy Hearns was a welterweight. Okay? Welterweight, junior, middleweight. Bottom line is smaller guy. Sugar Ray Leonard, smaller guy. Lost him. Roberto Duran almost lost him. A smaller guy. The smaller guy is John Mugabe. John the Beast Mugabe. The last fight that he won in 1986. Talking about Marvin Hagler, of course, before the late Ray Leonard fight in 87. But that was the last fight he won, of course, at war. And that sort of convinced Ray. Ray should have been convinced after the Roberto Duran fight in 1983 to fight Hagler right then and there, but he wasn't. He was still insecure. He was still scared. He had to wait another 3.5 years. He had to wait for Hagler to fight Hearns. He had to wait for Hagler to fight Mugabe. And then the Mugabe fight took so much out of Hagler. You know, and then, of course, they had the special conditions. The special conditions being we're going to fight 12 rounds. The special conditions being the ring's going to be a certain size. I think it was 20 feet or bigger. And, of course, they were going to have certain gloves, this and that. And, of course, Marvin sold his soul there. Got $24 million in total. And at the end of the day, lost the championship by 2 points. That's all there is to it. As far as these people sending me all this stuff on, we're still talking about a 1987 fight, but people sending me all these texts and emails, of course, on Facebook talking about, oh, Marvin Hagler got robbed. Listen, Lou Filippo was the judge. Lou Filippo was the judge. He was the judge that had Marvin Hagler winning 115-113, of course, 7-5 in rounds. And he and I went round and around. And Marvin Hagler and I went round and round about it. Bottom line is, Hagler lost. He gave away 4 of the first 5 rounds. Do the math. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
This is my buddy Lenny Williams' first hit. And yeah, check this out. I'm over in a club, Kimball's East, over in Emeryville, California. I had a few drinks one night, and I'm there with Jose Miservi, my buddy Jose. And Lenny sticks a mic in my mouth, and sticks a mic at me. Come on, Pedro, sing. So I tried to say shoo-doo, foo-foo, winning. Bottom line is I really sounded bad and I embarrassed myself. So I shouldn't be picking up microphones as far as singing is concerned. Leave that to Mr. Lenny Williams. Of course, you can always check out Lenny at LennyWilliams.com. My man, one of the true godfathers of soul music. Of course, one of the Tower of Power leads, but on his own since 1976 and rocking and rolling, doing his thing. Check him out, LennyWilliams.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Last night, Joe the Beast Smith Jr., of course, that common name, he's not a common fighter. The guy's world class, there's no doubt about it. But he tangled with Eliezer Alvarez. Alvarez, a Colombian fighter, of course. Last time I saw him in person, he was at the WBO convention in Panama City. Roberto Duran was there. Of course, Isaac Dogbo was there, the former WBO 122-pound champion. He will get thrashed in his next fight. Alvarez will get thrashed in his next fight. So the two champions, I remember, that showed up, the two active WBO champions that showed up for that year, that convention 2 years ago, both those guys have lost their titles. Of course, Alvarez lost last night. Big time. I mean, Joe Smith came through. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Joe Smith is the real deal. You can never count this guy out. I mean, people say to me, come on, he's only the average fighter. He's not an average fighter. He was leading on all three scorecards last night, almost a shutout after eight rounds. He just was. And, of course, the stoppage, he means he's ready for another shot. It may be the WBA champion, Dimitri Bovil. Bovil, of course, is not the most exciting fighter in the world, but he continues to win. He's undefeated, and he did have a win over Smith, who's now 26-3 with 21 KOs a couple of fights back. Eliezer Alvarez now drops to 25-2, 13 KOs. Of course, last fight to Sergey Kovalev. Beat Sergey Kovalev, then lost to Sergey Kovalev. Somehow, he lost his mental edge. Fighters lose their mental edge. I don't know what happens to them, but they become champion. Instead of taking care of business, and Sergey Kovalev was nothing different than he was the first time, so it wasn't something where, you know, I've got a different guy in front of me. He was the same guy. I mean, you didn't need to do anything other than what you did the first time around. But Alvarez couldn't do that. He just couldn't put together another great effort. What am I trying to tell you? The Colombian is a choke artist. Straight up, Joe Smith Jr., a winner last night. Let's go to Joe ringside.
Joe, everybody knows what they're going to get when you step in the ring. Their corner said, look, he's a one-trick pony, but tonight it worked. His right's supposed to be his weapon. That's how you ended the fight. Talk to me about that finish.
You know, coming into this camp, I knew I had to work on my boxing. I wanted to be sharp, throw a lot of straight punches. I watched his fight with Kovalev, and Kovalev kind of set the way to beat him. So we watched that, and we worked off of it, you know. And I knew coming in today I had to box a little bit more because he's got that great right hand. You know, he caught me with it a couple of times, but, you know, I could take a punch too. So
yes, you can.
You know, I came right back, you know, every time he hit me. I wanted to come right back to stop him in his tracks, you know, and I did that tonight. I stuck to my game plan, you know, and it was a great night.
You mentioned the Rosinski win, then the Fonfara win, and then the Hopkins win, how they changed your life. How satisfying was this knockout?
I feel, you know, this one's a big one, man. I really needed it, you know, and I wanted to prove that I'm not just a knockout guy, you know. I got the boxing ability, too, and I showed that tonight and then got the knockout, so it was great.
You've got your first chance at a world title before. Now, this fight sets you up to face the winner of Salamov and Glasov. What would be different in your second world title opportunity?
I'm just going to be more prepared. You know, I'm going to stay more focused and just in the gym. You know, you got to work hard every day. And, you know, like I said, I got a lot more experience now. And I feel I'm ready for a second shot. And I'm going to bring it home.
Joe Smith Jr., give him some props, no doubt about that. He deserves applause for that. I mean, this took him apart last night. Give him props for that in the main event. Of course, that was on ESPN. ESPN had boxing yesterday, Showtime Championship. Take that back. Fox had boxing yesterday. And, of course, DAZN had some boxing. Of course, Dillian White getting knocked out with that one punch from Alexander Povetkin. Upcoming on the boxing schedule, of course, the 26th, I think we're going to get an ESPN fight. That's right, Jeff Horn, of course, the former WBO title holder at 147 pounds. I believe he beat Manny Pacquiao at one point in time. He's taking on Tim Zhu. Who's Tim Zhu? He is the son of former world champion, 140 pounds. One time the pound-for-pound king, Oscar De La Hoya, didn't want to have no part of him. I'm talking about Kostya Zhu. Of course, now Kostya's a father, training his kid, Tim Zhu. Of course, Tim Zhu, at 154 pounds, is going to be a much bigger and stronger fighter than Jeff Horn, who I think peaked maybe at 140 pounds or 147 pounds. A much smaller guy. 5 a.m. Eastern time, August 26th, as far as ESPN is concerned, they're going to cover this. Of course, some upcoming fights. Jorge Linares, that fight has been postponed. The 29th, a guy that I'm not too excited about at all, Daniel Dubois, is going to be on ESPN, of course, against a guy in the name of Ricardo Schneiders. No big thing there. But the fight in the next few weeks that's worth your watching. I think Jose Ramirez is a hell of a fighter. He's undefeated. He is a WBC 140-pound champion, of course, taking on Victor Postal. Postal's a decent fighter, but I think he's headed for trouble. Postal is like 31-2, 12 knockouts. The negative side on that is that he can't punch. And if you can't punch, how do you deal with Jose Ramirez? I mean, Jose Ramirez is the real deal. Jose Carlos Ramirez, I kid you not. What is he, 25, how many knockouts he got? 25, no, 18 whacks, somewhere around there. But, yeah, 17 whacks. But he's the real deal. And these guys are going to be hooking it up on ESPN. You get to watch two world-class fighters. Now, I think Ramirez is going to win here, but it's no guarantee. And Postal's a good fighter. What I'm trying to tell you is this may be one of boxing's future superstars. And I think that at 140 pounds, you know, we need superstars at 140 and 147 and 135. Why do I say that? Because they're probably the most exciting weight classes. Yeah, some people used to like the middleweight division. The reason why they liked the middleweight division was the fact that the average American back in the days when boxing was heading in its heydays in the 40s and 50s, the average American was a middleweight, 160 pounds. God knows it's not that way anymore with three meals a day. But anyway, that's another subject for another day. But anyway, the average American was 160 pounds back then. And so that was called the working man's division. I'm talking the middleweight division. Now, middleweights right now, of course, Gennady Golovkin, Canelo Alvarez. Canelo's not going to get beat, not by Golovkin, okay? And who else is Canelo going to fight? He's going to fight some WBC stiff. Of course, the WBC ordered him to fight some guy. I'll get to the name a little bit, but ordered him to fight this guy who's been beaten once and once beaten guy. Decent fighter, no doubt about that. But he ordered him to fight him after, I believe, the WBC checked in with Oscar De La Hoya in advance. In other words, they're not making any moves to rock the Canelo boat. They do not want to rock the Canelo boat. Why? Because Canelo sells a lot of tickets, or he sold a lot of tickets, and then... Of course, he'll still do the pay-per-view thing. And that's the big question as far as Canelo is concerned. Will he fight only on television in a studio, and will he take a pay cut? Because DAZN wants him to take a major pay cut. Of course, I think he was getting like $35 million a fight. Now they want him to take less. He doesn't want to take less. Of course, they're getting shied out of about maybe about $10 million in a live gate. So you got to see where DAZN's going to lose $10 million off the gate, off the bat, if they give him the $35 million. Plus, they want him to fight decent guys. And really, for Canelo, there's nobody out there. In fact, I mentioned earlier about Oscar De La Hoya and his comeback. And is he coming back to fight Canelo? I mean, because he's not going to make any lighter weights. I was thinking about that. I was talking with Socrates Palmer, Boxing's PhD, on the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, you can always catch these podcasts at anchor.com. Check it out, Ring Talk Worldwide at anchor.com, all the podcasts. But, you know, I just don't know. He said that Oscar couldn't make 147. I don't think he can make 147. He didn't think Oscar could make 160. He didn't think Oscar was going to fight anywhere lower than he sort of tinted at 165 pounds, somewhere around there. If that's the case, I guess he does fight Canelo, and they do make a little bit of money. At least they make a little money in that they get Canelo a date. See, they got to get Canelo a date with a guy that can lick in order to, like, push this contract further down the road. They want to kick this can down the road. Because let's be honest, they're not looking to fight killers. They signed a $350 million contract for 10 fights. They've got to win 10 fights in order to cash the check for $350 million. So they've got to keep winning. And, of course, you know, Canelo, I'm not trying to say he's getting old, but he's getting up there. Father Time's going to start knocking on his door pretty soon because, like Socrates said, the only undefeated person in all of boxing is Father Time. Speaking of undefeated, guess who's coming up next? The retired HBO Godfather returns. That's right. Larry Merchant. We'll hear from Larry Merchant talking about the HBO days. That's right. Back in the days, baby. Of course, HBO, I was looking at a schedule the other day that Johnny Sigurd put up in 2012. In fact, I think I mentioned this on a prior show. But, like, all these different fights, but they are all highlighted by HBO Championship Boxing. Because, you know, HBO kept boxing honest. And why do I say that? Kept boxing honest because they wouldn't buy crap. And if promoters wanted to put their fights on the big channel, get it on the big stage, they had to do things right. They couldn't put crap at us. We didn't get too many 40-1 fights, if any. Take that back. We did get a 40-1 fight on HBO. That was Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson. Outside of that, 40-1 fights were unheard of. Straight up, Buster Douglas melting down Mike Tyson. The biggest upset in sports history, no doubt about that. So next up, Larry Merchant on the glory days of HBO on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
The way that you walk, the way that you talk, really knocks me out, girl. The clothes that you wear, the style of your hair, the way that you fare, under all conditions, your mind. Super fine. I'm so glad you're mine.
Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Go put your coat on, honey. This is getting good.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Yesterday, my current guest, Larry Merchant, told me he was being interviewed by somebody who was looking into the history of HBO. You know, you and I haven't talked about HBO. I mean, the fact that when HBO sort of retired and went off the air as far as boxing was concerned, that was a bit sad. But outside of that, we haven't talked really extensively about your time at HBO. What were the highlights and the lowlights? If you go through it, like from 78 on, right? From 78 is when you started, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, to me, they were just highlights and bigger highlights. Whether it turned out well or not, if you're out there analyzing and telling stories and critiquing, there are some nights when you miss the story.
Mm-hmm.
You miss the central story of the fight. That happens, and that's why, just like you have three officials, and you hope that at least two of them get a result right, you have three announcers, or at least we did, and you hope that two of them got it right, and most usually we did. But there were higher highlights. We covered so many great fights from Sugar Ray Leonard and Hearns and Hagler in the 80s, and then the heavyweights in the late 80s and early 90s. I always think of the my timeline regarding Mike Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And our experiences together and his leaving HBO because he didn't particularly want me to announce his fights. But, you know, I don't think of it in those terms. You know, what I think of is one of the questions I'm often asked is what my best interviews were.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are thinking of the incident with Floyd Mayweather, but to me,
not me,
the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson fight, which was of course this enormous upset, was some kind of serious moment for me as a broadcaster. I had originally come from print journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buster Douglas, after that fight, was so tied up emotionally, having won the heavyweight championship of the world, having maybe resolved some issues with his father, who was a tough middleweight in his time, not a championship caliber fighter, but a tough guy. And Buster was raised in his gym, and Buster wasn't exactly a tough guy, and he tried other sports until he came back to boxing. And then the fact that his mother had died a few weeks before. So all these entanglements, emotional history came to play, and when I went to interview Buster Douglas, he couldn't talk. He was so wound up emotionally. And I heard a voice in my head saying, "This is show and tell, Larry. Just let's show this. We do these interviews in part to show who these fighters are as human beings. We do these interviews to answer some questions and question some answers." And he couldn't talk, and he stepped back, and his handlers took him, and they were whispering to him, "Let's go back to the dressing room, let's go." And but he wanted to tell his story, and it took him maybe 20 or 30 seconds, which is a lifetime in television seconds, to gather himself to tell the story he wanted to tell about the fight and what it all meant to him. To me, that was my suddenly becoming a professional at this craft, because I understood that the camera focusing on this guy who had just pulled off the upset of the century, or so we thought at the time, and all of his emotional cords being rung, that was real television. It didn't need a question. But then he stepped forward and we talked about all of these things, and to me that was a primal moment. And there were other lessons that I learned from what I did across the years.
You know, when I think of Buster Douglas, I think of Haseem Rahman and most recently Andy Ruiz, guys that pulled off this huge upset and then just couldn't handle it emotionally.
Well, they couldn't handle it afterwards. Certainly Buster Douglas couldn't. He put on
100 pounds.
15 pounds or so for his fight with Holyfield,
yeah,
and didn't seem to care very much. And he didn't. He didn't love boxing. In that moment, because of his mom's death, because of his differences with his father, and because he was fighting for the heavyweight championship, it was a way of redeeming his whole life. And those are the stories we try to tell. But, yeah, you know, fighters are human beings, and some of them handle things differently than others. I have to remind myself that the guy I'm trying to interview was just getting punched for an hour. So,
yeah,
and just learning to do my homework before the events so that I will have enough of information in my head to feel that I could say certain things.
I think it was 1982, and I used to, Harold used to tell me this, the late Harold Letterman, your broadcast partner, of course, the HBO boxing judge, that voice, Harold's voice. Well, Jim, bottom line is, Harold told me the best fight that he ever called, he thought, with you guys was the Gomez-Pintor fight, Wilfredo Gomez and Lupe Pintor, back in 1982. Of course, Pintor ascending from 118 pounds to 122 pounds. He had beaten the former bantamweight great Carlos Zarate at 118, moved up to 122, and Gomez just, they went back and forth. Gomez finally won, but what a battle of wills.
Yeah, and that was the next fight we did after the fight in Miami. I'm trying to think of the names of the fighters. They fought at least one rematch. The great fighter from Nicaragua.
Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor.
Right. I mean, how good was that? So we were in a run in those days of having a lot of big fights, which sometimes means an outstanding fighter is in a mismatch because there just aren't enough guys around to compete with him, or two really good fighters just throwing down.
Yeah, you know, we brought up Alexis Arguello there. Of course, death in 2009, 2008, still questionable whether he shot himself or somebody killed him. He was so emotionally depressed that he came on his show and talked about death and things like that. And I tried to go down to Nicaragua and straighten him out, and he finally went into rehab, this and that. But both he and Pryor were smoking crack together in Miami. When he told me that story, I almost wanted to cry. He was telling me the story in Managua, Nicaragua, sitting in his backyard. And he goes, yeah, Aaron and I were smoking crack together in Miami. And I say to myself, what could send a man in that direction? You know, I was just blown away by that. And Alexis was never the same, ever. He was an emotionally tender man. And I think that first fight with Pryor just broke him for the rest of his life.
Well, listen, how many tens of thousands of people are dying in America of opioids every year?
Every day.
That may not be the same as trying to achieve a high. It's trying to avoid a low. and then getting so low you never return. But crack was a thing, and it affected all of society, and it shouldn't surprise us that some fighters were affected by it as well.
Speaking of this opioid thing, I mean, the fact that you can get, that you were able to get these pills, I mean, they were willing to give them to me left and right. I never took a one in my life. I never took a one, but they gave me a couple of pain pills one time for my dentistry and for my back and this and that. And that's what they tell me. Just take this. Just take this. Godfather, man, these are doctors pushing stuff on you. So you get the assumption that it's good. You know what I'm saying? And then you find out after a week you're hooked.
Well, you know, I've read many stories about this phenomenon, and it's sad. It's happened to a lot of average people who have lost their jobs in the changing job market of modern times and have no place to go and are depressed because of how it can break up families, and they look to avoid the pain that they're experiencing. I don't know that the government has done enough to limit that, but obviously there are other solutions that that prevail. But let's say you lived in a, you know, in a town in Ohio,
yeah,
and it's had manufacturing there for generations, and your family and friends are all there, and suddenly,
yeah, but
jobs are gone.
But Godfather, that shouldn't turn you into a heroin addict. Anyway, say hello to the God Mama for me. It is January 12, 2020. I love you, and we'll talk real soon.
Keep the faith, Pedro.
The Hall of Famer, the one, the only, the Godfather, retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant in the house. Thank you so much, Godfather. This is Ring Talk, live worldwide.
Together, call the track, and they party. Hey! Good foot. You know, the dance on the good foot. Dance on the good foot. Ain't nothing going on but the winter.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The new Tower of Power, check them out, towerofpower.com. Of course, they are the Godfathers of the space soul, no doubt about that. 51, 52 years plus now, 52 plus years now, are just rocking it, knocking it out of the park. Check them out, towerofpower.com. Some upcoming fights I'm pretty interested in. Of course, the big fight. I'm talking about the big, big fight, the only fight that's really of significant value on the schedule. I'm talking about Teofimo Lopez, 15-0, 12 KOs, of course, holds a version of the lightweight crown, taking on Vasyl Lomachenko, holds like more three or four of the lightweight belts. So the bottom line is these guys are fighting for a lot of belts. These guys are going to hook it up at 135 pounds. Of course, Lomachenko, considered like a god in boxing right now. Nobody could beat him. He's unbeatable. In fact, the former manager of Roberto Duran, Hector Martinez, was going to come on and blow Lomachenko out of the water as far as blowing him. I mean, he was going to say to Lomachenko, this is a one-sided fight, that the other kid's just too young. He's getting in here for the payday, the blah, 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 blah. We'll talk about that in depth, I guess, if we ever get Mr. Martinez on the air. But I just don't see it that way. I don't. I think that the Lomachenko's old. He's 35 years old. He had over 300 amateur fights, two-time world amateur champion. I think his clock is ticking. And, of course, the only guy that's unbeatable is Father Time. And I think Father Time is basically that he has reached his zenith, and that Father Time will be taking over in this fight against Lopez. Lopez will knock him out with the same right hand. That's right, I'm predicting it right now. That's right, I'm predicting it right now. Hector, are you listening? That's right. Lopez will knock him out with the same right hand that Jorge Linares dropped him with. In other words, if he hits him that just once, he's going to go down and he's going to be out, because Lopez hits a whole lot harder than Linares. And people say, oh, that was a surprise punch. No, punches aren't surprises, folks. You're in a boxing match. Okay, you're in a boxing match. I mean, if you weren't in a boxing match and you got punched, that would be a surprise punch. But no. Bottom line is, there's no such thing as a surprise punch. Now, this guy that Canelo Alvarez is supposed to fight, Avni Yildirim, 21-2, 12 KOs, couldn't lick a stamp if he wet his tongue. That's what somebody told me. So they're going to fight for the WBC Super Middleweight Championship. Of course, this was announced this week by the WBC. We've ordered him to do so because they ordered him to do so after they dealt with Mr. Drag Queen himself, talking about Oscar De La Hoya. And, you know, you got to give it to Dana White. He did have the line of the week. He did have the line of the week. I mean, it was the line of the week, no doubt about it. When Oscar De La Hoya announced his comeback at 47 years old, what did good old Dana say? Cocaine ain't cheap. Oh. And I told you about all the cocaine parties that Oscar had with those hookers and this and that, and there was never any actual involved, any sex. There was a lot of getting dressed up, a lot of stimulation, this and that, but there was never actually any sex per se because you don't perform well on cocaine. At least men don't perform well on cocaine. The love drug, that's a bit of a joke, no doubt about that. Exactly. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, Stipe Miocic now going to fight Francis Ngannou for the World Heavyweight Championship. John Jones wants to step up to heavyweight, has given up his 205-pound championship, a light heavyweight title, and moved up to heavyweight, wants to negotiate his own purse against Francis Ngannou, I guess, because they're not going to give him Stipe Miocic. He wants to fight Miocic, but Miocic, of course, off the win over Danny Cormier a fortnight ago. Straight up, he is still the World Heavyweight Champion, but Not after the Francis Ngannou fight. Ngannou got a, this way, Stipe got a pass the first time, not the second time. He's going to sleep. And he's a better boxer than Ngannou, but Ngannou, the power, baby, the power rules. This has been Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a production of the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We come to you live every Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Of course, we can also catch our live TV broadcast and our podcast at twitch.tv, of course, the Sports Byline USA channel, and the podcast at anchor.com. Lots of information. Check us out, Sports Byline USA, of course, iHeartRadio. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.